I was listening to a space on X today, or yesterday rather. And you know, there was this very obnoxious sort of white supremacist on there, kind of Charlie Kirk wannabe, you know, had the same demeanor, same typical sort of aggressive style, you know. They use aggression tactically to flood your limbic system. So your prefrontal cortex goes offline and your amygdala takes over. You should pay attention to that. Blood flow shifts from the reasoning centers of your brain to the motor cortex, you know, your working memory buffer, the space where you, in your brain, the space where you juggle facts, your logic chains, rhetorical structure, and so on, that shrinks. So you forget your data. You stumble over your words and you get flustered. They interrupt you, they cut you off, they raise their voice, and so on. And it isn't just because they are rude and obnoxious and they have no manners. It's not just because of that. It's because they're wrong. And they know that in any calm, reasonable discussion, this will become blatantly obvious. So this is the approach they take. You know, they always claim to be people who love facts and who love logic. You know, facts don't care about your feelings and so on. But their whole style is tactically intended to sabotage the discussion of facts and logic. Because always, always, they cannot actually contend with facts and logic. You know, they pretend that they want that kind of a discussion, but they absolutely actually want to derail reasoning. And they want you to be emotional. You should take note of that. This is a patented Western approach. This is how they do. Always aggressive, always confrontational, always trying to, by hook or by crook, trying to undermine actual, reasoned, calm, intellectual discussion, while always claiming that they're all about rationality. This is the West in microcosm. So anyway, this white supremacist was sort of rattling off all the standard talking points that he got from some, you know, KKK subreddit or what have you. The Jews were disproportionately responsible for American slavery, saying that the Jews owned the slave ships, the Jews financed the trade, the Jews owned most of the slaves, and so on. Imagine saying that. You must think we're really stupid. Like Alabama and Mississippi are renowned for their thriving Jewish populations, you know? Because, yeah, of course, Jews in America are, you know, have always been associated with agriculture. Sure. I mean, it's goofy. It's goofy on the face of it. But okay, let's address it. Let's actually address it. I mean, someone tweeted in association with that space, a revisionist history figure that said that only 2% of American Southerners own slaves. You know, we've all actually misunderstood how truly upright and humane the American South really was. We've all misunderstood that. Well, look, the census of 1860, this isn't esoteric. Anyone can read the columns. You strip out the so-called free North and look at the families, look at the households, and you'll find that roughly one white Southerner in five kept human beings as property, with planter belts like Mississippi and South Carolina pushing closer to one out of every two. So no, we're not talking about 2%. We're talking about 20%, and in some places 50%. So don't try to act like slave ownership was some fringe practice in the South. It wasn't. And the only reason that the percentages of ownership aren't higher among the general population is because of affordability, not because of morality. The highest percentage of slave ownership by Jews in the American South was only around 1.3%. And that was just before the Civil War, and that was the highest that they ever got. And I'm sorry to tell you, but if you follow the money upstream in the slave industry in those days, you go upstream on that money chain, you're going to find churches and cathedrals, not synagogues. From the Portuguese to the English, with the what they call the Royal African Company, Liverpool, and so on. This is Christian Europe. Christian Europe's monarchs, Christian Europe's merchants, their insurers, and so on, they stamped their mark on every invoice. Liverpool alone dispatched somewhere around 5,000 slaving voyages between 1700 and 1807. That's a statistic that you can find in the Transatlantic Slave Trade Database online. You can look it up. Lloyd's of London was the insurer. They insured the traffic so thoroughly that slave voyages accounted for maybe around 5 to 10% of all marine premia in the late 18th century. And no, Lloyds of London was not Jewish. They were Anglicans and they were Protestants. So just be honest. I mean, of course, Jews did participate. Of course they did. That was a lucrative evil that you normalized. But make no mistake about it. That was a white European Christian enterprise. Jews had a walk-on role. A historical ledger-by-ledger review of every surviving British and American slave voyage puts the Jews' share of the Atlantic traffic well under 2%. That's a statistical whisper beside the roar of Christian capital. Let's be serious. So no, the slave trade was not some covert Semitic conspiracy foisted on the innocent white Europeans. No, it was an enterprise conceived, financed, and defended by Christian imperial power. Jews just sampled a corner of the poison banquet that the Europeans had laid themselves. They spread that banquet out. Now, that's not to exonerate anyone who was involved in that. It's just facts. These are just the facts. You were the buyers. You were the transporters. You were the owners. You were the slave drivers, and everybody knows it. You want to put every wicked thing that you've done at the feet of the Jews. You know, were the Jews the masterminds behind the Spanish Inquisition? Were they the masterminds behind the Crusades, the Salem witch hunts? You know, the Jews, I suppose, made you genocide the Native Americans. The Jews made you lynch African Americans. The Jews made you drop the atomic bombs on Japan, right? I mean, come on. Every evil, every inhuman thing that you've done was done at the behest of the Jews, or it was done because the Jews manipulated you and controlled you. Is that what you want us to believe? If it wasn't for the Jews, you'd just love black people, wouldn't you? Meanwhile, this same white supremacist, this Charlie Kirk clone on that X-Space that I was listening to, was simultaneously spewing anti-black racist diatribes about, you know, low IQ, criminality, violent tendencies, on and on and on. The same old thing that you always hear from them. I mean, the man was embodying the exact mentality of the racist, dehumanizing white slave owners that he wants to pretend didn't exist, or he wants to pretend only existed because of the Jews. No, you were bad then and you're bad now. And you can't even open your mouth except that you announce it yourself by your own words. Even while you are trying to deflect and blame shift, you're racist, you're supremacist, you're cruel and heartless. And on top of all that, you're craven and cowardly because you do evil that you know is evil, but you want to try to pin it on someone else. You know, you don't even have the guts to just be wicked and own it yourself. And you know, these are the same people who will say, well, you know, the Jews were kicked out of so many countries. There must be a reason. There has to be a reason for that. Never grasping that the hatred and supremacism that leaks out of your pores gives us the answer. You know, the venom and the viciousness of your loathing is on full display all the time. They hate Jews. They hate Muslims. They hate Africans. They hate Mexicans. They hate immigrants. It's endless. Who don't you hate? And always their malice is cast as if it's their victim's fault. Do you know how much you sound like a serial abuser talking about all his crazy exes? You're sick in the head. And I mean, look, what are their excuses? Jews made you do it, right? You know, Epstein blackmail, AIPAC, whatever the case may be. This is what they always say. Okay, let's go with Epstein, right? So it's his fault that you're a pedophile, right? I mean, if you're getting blackmailed, you say that that Epstein is blackmailing all of these legislators and so forth, means you did something, didn't you? You did something unspeakable, and Jeffrey Epstein just facilitated it and put it on tape. That's just opportunistically taking advantage of your pre-existing perversion. What kind of argument is that? And AIPAC, right? They give legislators donations. Okay. So your argument is that you can be bribed. You know? You'll literally fund an armed genocide in exchange for what? A payoff? And that's your self-exoneration? That's your argument that you're actually good? The Jews made you do all these heinous crimes that you committed as a nation? Really? Then honestly, how pathetic are you as a nation? How stupid are you as a nation? How incompetent are you as a nation? How immoral are you as a nation? That's your argument? I mean, for a white Western supremacist, you sure seem to believe that white Westerners are the absolute dregs of mankind. You believe that apparently these white, supreme white people have no agency, no willpower, no morality, no ethics, no conviction, no intelligence. I mean, that's your own argument. That's not me. That's you saying it. Meanwhile, you believe in the you know, the Ubermensch, Superman, Aryan super race, the master race. But according to you, this so-called master race has been played with like a yo-yo to do the bidding of Jews throughout all of your recorded history. I mean, are you starting to see why they absolutely do not want to have a reasoned discussion about their ideas? Because it's not only their ideas are not only void of facts, they have filled that void with utter self-contradictory nonsense. But look, it's good. The blame shifting is good, honestly, because it shows how badly they want to distance themselves, how badly they want to disassociate themselves from what they are having the Israelis do for them in Gaza, what they are having the Israelis do for them in the region. You know, we're on the verge of the great divorce. And I've been telling you that we would see, I've been telling you for a long time now, that we're going to see the floodgates open in terms of that latent, seething, and ever-present Western anti-Jewish hatred. That's why you sent the Jews over there to do it in the first place. That's why. That's why you made your colonial stormtroopers a Jewish brigade, precisely so that you could disavow them when the time came. I saw this coming years ago, and here we are. It's the Jews. I mean, it's our money, it's our weapons, it's our policy, it's our political coverage, it's our bombs, it's our missiles, it's our attack helicopters, it's our support, but it's the Jews. Because it's the henchman who always takes the fall. That's why they set the system up like that, plausible deniability. And that's why they're going hard in the paint with the blame shifting now. That's why you've got your Candace Owens types, your Tucker Carlson types, and so on, sort of opening the tap on despising Jews in acceptable public discourse. It's transparent. And no, I've said it many times, the Israelis are absolutely responsible for their actions. No question about it. Just like the death squads that Washington unleashed on Central and South America. Just like every hired killer, just like every mercenary is responsible for his crimes. No question about it. The henchmen are responsible for what they do. The hitmen are responsible for what they do. The Nazi guards who were just following orders were responsible for their actions. But that doesn't get their superiors off the hook. That doesn't mean that they're the only ones who are responsible. No. But you see this blame shifting, this emerging narrative, that's by no means a new narrative, by the way, about, you know, Jewish iniquity, Jewish wickedness, Jewish control, that old Nazi narrative. This is emerging anew right now for the purpose of blame shifting. I've talked about it before. But think through what that means. It's deliberate alibi creation by the West. It's cleanup. It's trying to wipe their fingerprints off the crime scene. Well, what does that mean? Well, in court, that would be proof of premeditation and full cognition that what you did was wrong, that you knew what you did was wrong. It means you're in full command of your faculties. There's no insanity defense for you. So you see, it means that you know that these are horrible crimes that you committed, slavery, lynching, genocide, Zionism. It shows that you know perfectly well that these are irredeemable crimes that you committed. You know right and wrong. That's why you want to distance yourselves. You want to blame shift. You want to disavow because you know that what you did is monstrous. But just look at the corruption, you know? Look at the complete absence of character on the part of the West, on the part of the Americans. Because what a decent person would do is repent. A decent person would own up to what they did and repent. They would be contrite. They would be remorseful. They would stop what they were doing and they would try to atone. That's what a decent person would do, and that's what a decent nation would do. But that's not what you do. You try to pin it on someone else. You want to pin it on your partner in crime. You want to get out of it by any means. You have no concept of accountability. The West has no concept of accountability. Just look at the corruption. Look at this weaselly character, Uncle Sam. Oh, he's a weasel. Uncle Sam is the most craven, cowardly, unmanly, weaseliest character in the history of nations, honestly. Whenever the bill comes due for the things that he's done, he tries to slide it under the door. He tries to, you know, slip it under someone else's door and tiptoe away. No. The slave ships in the transatlantic slave trade were captained by men with names like Roberts and Smith, not Bernstein and Rothbard. I mean, how many African Americans you know today who today, still, until now, carry the family names of their enslaved ancestors' owners? How many of them are named Cohen and Leibowitz rather than Jones or Washington? No. And the Zionist genocide of the Palestinians that's been going on for all these decades, that has been underwritten and it has been overseen by men named Truman, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush again, Obama, Trump, Biden, and Trump again. And every single one of those men have underwritten and have overseen catastrophic violence, war crimes, crimes against humanity, massacres, death squads, drone strikes, invasions, assassinations, coups, overthrows, forced starvation on whole populations, mass murder, torture, and inhuman brutality all around the world. And every single one of those criminals has a statue erected for him in his honor in your country. That's your people. Yes, you know right and wrong. Otherwise, you wouldn't try to disassociate yourselves from your evil actions. But that's the only instinct you have when it comes to right and wrong. Self-exoneration, self-preservation. You don't use the knowledge of right and wrong to choose doing right. You only use that knowledge to avoid the consequences of doing wrong. That's what you do with your recognition of what's right and what's wrong. You have no moral hygiene. As long as your reputation can stay clean, you don't care how dirty your actions are. That's the West. See, this is crucial to understand. This shows that you have a commitment, an absolute commitment to wrongdoing. Do you understand me? It shows that you have a dedication to never changing, never repenting, never taking accountability, never looking your victims in the face and begging for forgiveness. You understand? The whole world looks at America and sees you sitting in the dock of the court, but you keep trying to act like you're sitting behind the judge's bench. You're delusional. Your whole history is a rap sheet. Your whole history is a criminal record. Everyone's memory of you around the world is one giant chorus of indictments and accusations and recriminations, not allegations. No. You've been convicted in the hearts and minds of the people of every country that you ever touched. Meanwhile, you're trying to tell us, you're trying to tell all of the people that you victimized that we're supposed to despise someone else, we're supposed to blame someone else, hate someone else. At this point, you're only gaslighting yourselves. No one believes you. No one's listening to you. On that space, this white supremacist was arguing that white supremacy isn't a thing. And he said, give me an example of white supremacy today in 2025. The question is an example. Your denial is an example of white supremacy. The fact that you think that literally centuries of experience, experience right up until this very moment while I'm speaking right now, the fact that you think that the lived misery of millions of people for hundreds of years from your racism, your bigotry, your hatred, your violence, your exploitation, your pillage and your plunder, you think that all of that is negated by the power of your denial, the entitlement. You think that we're going to watch you, you think that we're going to listen to you, literally spewing venom against everyone else, against Jews, against Muslims, against so-called black people, against immigrants, against Asians, against Indians, against basically anyone except white Anglo-Saxons. And somehow we're supposed to understand from all of that that we got you wrong and you're really a fair-minded, unbiased believer in human equality. Come on. And if we listen to all of your hatred and understand from that that you are, in fact, a racist, white supremacist, bigoted, mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging, hate-filled heathen, if that's what we take, then you'll just say, well, it's because we have low IQs. An example of white supremacy? You're the embodiment of white supremacy. It's the racial equivalent of malignant narcissism, you know? It's that fake superiority of the wholly inadequate, morally inadequate, intellectually inadequate, culturally inadequate, spiritually inadequate, developmentally inadequate, and trying to act superior. The only thing that you excel at is pretending otherwise. And if you interpret what I'm saying, by the way, let me clarify this. If you interpret what I'm saying as so-called reverse racism, no. I'm not even talking about it racially. You are. I don't attach your crimes to your skin color. You do. What I indict are your deeds. But you take that as an attack on so-called white people because you've got that on the brain. I don't. So-called white and so-called black is only a thing because you made it a thing and you insist on keeping it a thing. That puts you in a position of having to make European and American crimes like it's an inherent aspect of so-called whiteness. So that means that you can't repent from your crimes because you think that that would mean basically admitting that criminality is encoded in your DNA. That's what your sick theories and your ideas and your sick culture did to you. You racialize everything. So you can't even be honest about your history. Because you think that if you're honest about your history, then that would be a racial indictment. So for the sake of defending your so-called whiteness, okay, you either defend or you deny or you dismiss or you shift the blame for all of your horrific and shameful history. You don't have to do that. In fact, you have to not do that. Racialization is a sickness that you inflicted upon yourself, and then you inflicted it upon the rest of the world. So now you feel the need to try to side with or be loyal to or align yourself with literally unspeakable crimes just because the people who committed those crimes were wearing the same color skin as you. You created this atrocious notion that so-called race is actually a meaningful classification of human beings and that it's hierarchical and that it denotes all of the sorts of qualities and traits that are actually only present in a human being by their conscious choices, not by genetic coding. You know, like the choice to be decent, to be peaceful, or to be indecent or to be violent, the choice to be kind or the choice to be cruel. You act like this is all based on their skin color. These are not immutable qualities, like your melanin composition or your bone structure. These are from conscious choice. I'm not making an indictment of white people. I'm making an indictment of evil people. But what you hear is white people. So you hear me calling you immutably evil. That's your philosophy, not mine. We're Muslims. We categorize people according to their beliefs and according to their conscious behavior, according to their actions, not by the texture of their hair or the shape of their nose or their skin tone. That's ludicrous. So you think that you cannot rebuke the whole brutal history of your countries because you imagine that that would mean you are rebuking your so-called race, that that's very important to you, and therefore you would be rebuking yourself and your whole identity. And that's what makes you integrate that whole brutal history into your identity. You understand? That is as monstrous as it is unnecessary. You can choose to associate yourself with those who do good, those who are just, and those who have been victimized, and those who have been wronged. You can do that. Even if their so-called race is different from yours, and even if their oppressors were from your so-called race. Choosing to align and choosing to affiliate on the basis of values and beliefs and actions, that's what you can do. You can use that as the criteria for categorizing people. That's sensible. And then you'll never be stuck trying to defend horrible behavior. You'll never be stuck trying to justify crimes. You'll never be stuck denying factual history. But see, this is why I've said repeatedly, talking about the West, I've said repeatedly, your culture let you down. Your so-called civilization let you down. They wired their societies. They wired your societies so badly. They programmed you so badly. And it goes so deep that at this point, you're basically malware. You know, you enter into a conversation and everybody's antivirus protection software goes off. Threat detected. You're radioactive. You're radioactive and still you act like the solution to your radioactivity is more uranium. Your so-called civilization infected you with so many false ideologies, so many malignant characteristics and traits, so many bad habits, so many mental and thinking disorders, that your civilization doomed you to disgrace. And that's a shame. It's a shame, but it's no longer anyone else's problem but yours. This is what you really have to understand. Not only is it not the rest of the world's responsibility to fix you, they're not even obliged to tolerate you. And this goes back to what I've talked about before, about the necessity of erecting barriers around yourself and around your discourse and around your interactions. Because right from the outstart, on that space that I was listening to, that white supremacist, on that X space, he was and obviously he was a bad faith actor. Not only do these types of people not want to engage sincerely in discussion, they don't even have the ability to do so. They're not capable of sincerity. And no one should feel reluctant about muting those people. They're disruptive. Like I said, the way they engage is tactically designed to try to undermine rational discourse. You need to get them out. Understand, no one is entitled to be in your conversations. No one is entitled to inject themselves and inject their nonsense and inject their aggressive ignorance into your mind. I said they're radioactive. They should be quarantined. Understand, they have lost the privilege of participating in serious discussions. They've lost the privilege of being listened to. For Muslims, for people in the global south, for people who are genuinely serious about social issues, issues of justice, international affairs, and so on, humanity, okay? You need to prove your own seriousness by expelling unserious people from your spaces. It's like protecting yourself from the waswasa of shaitan, honestly. It's no different. Build your community and understand that part of building your community includes knowing who doesn't belong there, knowing whose presence in your community is destructive and disruptive. Not letting these kinds of people come into your spaces isn't some kind of violation of their rights. No, their invasion and infiltration of your spaces is a violation of your rights. Don't let them contaminate the intellectual hygiene of your discourse. They've got plenty of other places they can go to spew their rancor. So ask yourself, why are they coming to you? Why are they coming to your spaces and your conversations? It's disrespectful, but it's intentional disrespect. You understand? It's actually a test to see whether or not you respect yourself enough to kick them out. No, don't let them hijack your platform for their hate and their ignorance and their blame shifting. Don't do that. Don't let your platforms, don't let your discourse, your discussions, your conversations, and so on become vehicles for their propaganda. You're building macro level realities through realities at the micro level. You need to be strict, you need to be vigilant, and you need to be serious, and you need to police the quality of what you expose yourself to and what you expose others to through what you allow on your platform. Think about it. Why do you think that these people are coming into our spaces in the first place? Why do you think they're coming onto our platforms specifically? You notice they're coming into pro-Palestinian spaces trying to spin narratives to exonerate themselves because they're getting squeezed. They're trying to cut a deal with the DA. It's like that. They're coming into pro-Palestinian spaces because they want to cut a deal. They want to get themselves off the hook by making a direct appeal, by making direct contact with the people who are prosecuting the genocide in the public sphere. It's clear as day. That's why they're coming. Otherwise, they would never have condescended to talk to any of us before. Honestly, it's because they're getting squeezed right now. Their feet are to the fire. So now you see, white supremacists, racist, Western exceptionalists suddenly showing up in Muslim spaces, suddenly showing up in pro-Palestinian spaces. You and I know that they hate us. They hate people like us. They don't believe in anything that we believe in. But here they are, coming to our doors to plead their case. And because they are so inherently dishonest, so inherently cowardly, they can't even plead their case on the basis of them being good, but on the basis of other people being worse. Understand? Trying to misdirect our anger, trying to throw us off the scent. That's the only reason they're showing up at our doors, on our platforms, in our conversations. You know, you have two types of these. You have the neo-Nazi type, who tells you, you know, that the problem is only the Jews, And then there's that other type, that George Galloway, Scott Ritter, colonizer activist type, the camouflage neocon type, who tells you that the whole problem is the Arabs and the Arab rulers and so on. These are the same. These two types are the same. All they're trying to do is exonerate America and exonerate the West, exonerate so-called white people. Honestly, imagine letting your enemy tell you who your enemy is and you believe him. You must think we're stupid. Truly, you never do right. You only ever gaslight. It's a shame that you're like that, but you are like that. And unless and until you're better, you know, because you should try to be better, but unless until you are better, you have no place at our tables.